Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. A guy who did miss it, you can be sure. He covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of his work. He's Mr. Scott Petrak. Hello, sir.
What's happening, Scott?
What's going on, guys?
Dan didn't miss it.
I didn't miss it. I had Ludwig Gebauer going, man, I'm winning a golf tournament that none of you people want. I was happy.
Wow. I don't know.
Dan didn't miss it, Scott.
I think you might have to take away his football fan card.
I think we have to.
I didn't miss it. There was enough other things going on. I didn't miss it.
It was a big day yesterday. There were a lot of other things going on. All I know is I can't wait until March 12th. I think that's the date. The beginning of the new league year and legal tampering. Get ready. Here we go. And so, to me, the good thing, Scott, the offseason doesn't last long because, to me, it begins in March.
Oh, yeah, it certainly does. And I'll tell you what, next Monday, I'll be on the way to the combine. So, there really is no offseason, you know. So, yes, there's no football on the field, but there's plenty of Browns stuff to talk about with really not too many lulls. You know, once you get to the combine, it leads into free agency, which leads into the draft, which leads into OTAs, and there you go.
All of a sudden, we're back again, Scott. Where are we on the Myles Garrett trade request? Is this just like the lull before we all end up hitting the combine and then rumors go flying again? Where are we in this?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Now, what's interesting is there's a couple of natural deadlines, or not deadlines, but mile markers. Let's say you have the combine, you have the start of free agency and the start of the league year, like Jeff mentioned, where teams start setting their rosters. So you want to know if you have a guy like Myles Garrett. You want to know how much money you have to spend and how much salary cap space you have. Then you have the draft, which, okay, if the Browns trade Myles Garrett, would they get draft picks beginning in 2025? And then you have, you know, the season, which is obviously is much later. So these are these natural things that will come up and that will certainly spur conversation and could spur the Browns to do something, but may not. And, you know, so I would expect the combine to be a site for talks, you know, between Andrew Berry and other teams and rumors. Doesn't mean anything will happen. But what's also interesting is back in the day, it felt like you couldn't make a trade until the actual league year started. And then a couple of years ago, you started hearing about agreements to trade even before the league year. So I don't want to put some artificial date like there can't be a Myles Garrett trade agreed to before March 10th, because I think you can see it at any time.
Scott Petrak joining us. The one thing that's weird to me about the whole Myles thing, all of the national folks who are commenting on it, so much stuff you read says, so these are his potential landing spots whenever he gets to his new team, will he fit in perfectly here? Where's he going to be? Nobody seems to think, it doesn't really behoove the Browns to trade him from a financial standpoint. and there's a good chance he's not going anywhere. That doesn't seem to be in the national narrative.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, that is probably because there's not really much to write if once you go, he's not going anywhere. You know, then what's the story? How do you get Washington people interested if you're just saying he's sticking in Cleveland? So that might just be a function of interest and, you know, what's going to generate content and get people excited. I think it's still, you know, real close to 50-50 whether or not the Browns trade him. There's certainly reasons to do it. You know, if you're going to try to get younger and get cheaper and redo your roster, and that would be a place to start if you think you can get a load of picks and players, whatever, a load back for Myles Garrett. But you mentioned the financial part of trading him, the salary cap, extra salary cap hit you'd have to take if you're the Browns. The fact that I think it's difficult to get proper return value-wise in a trade for Myles Garrett because he's so good, and I think you're going to get picks at the bottom of the first round or bottom of whatever round because you're trading with a good team. So I don't know if you get good value back for Myles Garrett. And then the fact that he's such a good player, I know the organization doesn't want to trade a player that they know is going to the Hall of Fame. So there's a lot of reasons not to trade him. There's certainly reasons to trade him, but I think it's far from a certainty either way.
And whoever picks him up has to have him a contract extension.
Right, which is one of the reasons I believe it. You know, everybody says, oh, all 31 teams should call the Browns. That, to me, that's not realistic. First of all, Miles is not going to go to a team that he doesn't think is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And why Miles has a say in this is because whatever team's trading for him is not going to do it without the understanding that he's going to sign a long-term extension. So a team like New England, which has a bunch of picks and a bunch of salary cap space, I don't think Miles is going to look at them and go, yeah, that's where I want to go. So New England can call, but I would think that that's not realistic. And I think that's the case for a number of teams. You have to have the money in the salary cap space to give him what would be a record-setting contract, and you have to be a Super Bowl contender. Because I think I don't think the Browns can just ship him to Siberia because that team needs to know that Miles is going to be willing to stay there long term.
Scott Petrak joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram, brownszone.com, where you can read all of Scott's work. Have you heard anything new with Deshaun Watson, his recovery, his contract? Any controversy there might be about trying to recover dollars in that contract by avoiding it because of anything that might have happened?
No, I have not. I think it's been pretty quiet. I've seen, I think I saw him one a Valentine's Day Instagram post, but aww. I didn't really wasn't able to read too much into that from a football perspective. I'm still working under the assumption that he doesn't play in 2025, that he never plays again for the Browns. You know, are they able to avoid the contract? I just can't imagine that he was doing something that would have been against his contract that would cause the Browns to allow the Browns to void it. So, you know, was he walking around without the boot after the doctor said yes? Okay, you know, I mean, even if he was dancing or working out.
Yeah, good luck trying to avoid the contract.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think he was snowboarding or doing anything that would have violated his contract. So I don't think that's the case. But, you know, if he misses all the 2025 season, then the Browns are in a position to file an insurance claim and get the cash back, you know, however insurance works, right? You file a claim and get the money, and then they would get some salary cap relief down the road once the issue was resolved. Now, it wouldn't be the full $73 million or even the $46 million that for his average contract, but they would be able to get some salary cap relief once it's settled. And, you know, I don't know if that makes anybody feel any better, but I do think there is, you know, if they're pitching pennies in the salary cap, which it appears they need to do, at some point that will help them or could help them if he doesn't play at all this year.
So you're off to the combine coming up. The Browns are off to the combine. They have the second pick in the draft. They need a quarterback. Common sense would tell you that they hope that there's somebody there that they want to take with the second pick who plays quarterback, doesn't it? But are they Are they bold enough that if somebody's not there who they really like, that they'll pass on a quarterback?
I completely agree with the first part, that you would want there to be a quarterback worthy of the number two pick when you're in the situation where you have no idea who's going to play starting quarterback
right.
for you.
You sure hope so, right?
I mean, for sure. You
have the chance to get one of the top two guys.
Yeah, I think that's the ideal situation to be in. Now, it has to match up with a worthy quarterback.
Yeah,
and I tend to think it is. You know, I've watched multiple games of both the top two guys and came away saying, I see potential, I see enough talent where I think this, whether it's Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, could succeed in the NFL. Now,
I agree with you, by the way.
So if that's the case, then I think you sit at two and take one. And I don't, you know, that to me, that beats trading down and getting a bunch of picks and pushing that down the road. The only way it would work differently is if you loved, you know, the next level of guys.
Jackson Dart,
Jalen Milroe, and thought that he would still be there 33. Or you could trade back up into the first round. But then you're really setting yourself up for somebody else to take the guy, because you're waiting a long time between two and whenever else you're picking again. So I think it's cleanest to just sit at number two and take a quarterback. But it's the Browns don't like either one or don't have either one ranked in their top 20 players from this draft, whatever that cutoff line is, then I do think they are disciplined enough not to take the quarterback at two. But I think they want to take the quarterback at two, and they hope that their evaluations prove that out.
Look into your crystal ball for me on this one. If they were to take a quarterback at two, is there any shot they would have that quarterback sit for an extended period of time? Or would it be, congratulations, you're the number two pick, now get out there and win us some football games, kid?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that they would tell you that they'd be willing to wait and make sure the quarterback's ready. And part of that would depend on who they sign in March. You know, I don't think we're going to be waiting long in free agency. I could be wrong, but I think we're going to know pretty quickly in March who the veteran quarterback is that they sign. And that could change how you feel about the need to play the rookie right away. So, you know how it works. So even if you have that guy, even if it's Kirk Cousins, and then you draft Sanders, and you say, hey, Cousins is the guy, we're going into the offseason thinking Cousins is the guy, the pressure to play the rookie is always going to be there.
Sure.
Now, you could start Cousins and see how it goes with the knowledge of, okay, if he struggles or if they lose games. So I think it's harder to sit a guy that's number two. You just don't see that a lot. I mean, you saw New England, right? I mean, Drake May didn't start the year, and he was the third pick. So it's not, you know, it's like it's never been done. But I think the reality is you'd likely see the number two pick start. And maybe that, you know, maybe when free agency gets there, and if they don't get a Kirk Cousins or don't get a slam dunk quarterback, that you say, okay, you can start this season or even play all season with this guy. Maybe that would be a signal that they're going to take a quarterback at number two.
One scenario that I think could be ideal is if they value, say, Jalen Milroe or Jackson Dart more so, or absolutely like neck and neck with Sanders and Ward, and the Raiders want Sanders, they trade up from six and get, you know, they get the second pick, and the Browns draft their guy at six, the guy they really want, and add draft assets. I mean, that's dream world scenario. But who knows how they evaluate these quarterbacks, and they're certainly not going to tell anybody.
Right. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying there, Jeff. Now, I think that is the best scenario, because you add whatever picks you would add to go from two to six. I do think if you're taking a guy that's not viewed as a first-round quarterback and you take him at six, it changes how that guy's viewed, and there's more pressure on him. I'm not saying that's not a reason to draft him there or to make that move. I just think that that's something that the organization would at least have to be cognizant of is, you know, everybody's got Miro ranked 38th, and you're taking him sixth. And that probably means you're going to play him earlier than you'd want to because he's a sixth pick and all those things that come with that. But maybe you just have to be strong as an organization and say, hey, we like this guy better, because you'd have to like him better, right? You'd have to like him better than the guy you're passing on at number two.
Yeah, because you're passing on a guy at two. Exactly, you're right, yeah.
Exactly. So then you'd have to be clear about that, is we think he's the better quarterback, and hope the guy lives up to what the dream is. Now, you know, and I know this is an unfair comparison, but Miro, the Lamar Jackson comparison is there. The Ravens didn't have to take him to the bottom of the first round. Yeah. But nobody would blink right now if you said Lamar Jackson was taken obviously first or second or sixth, wherever it was. So if you get the pick right, it doesn't really matter.
Jalen Hurt, you know, you can throw him in there too, right?
Sure, sure.
But it's back to that whole philosophy, guys, of there was a plan for all of those teams, and then they turned around and they followed that plan. They didn't let external noise. They didn't steer away from it. They didn't listen to everybody else screaming and yelling, oh my gosh, you took this guy high, you had to play him. No, there was a plan, and you followed the plan. And that's my biggest fear when it comes to the Cleveland Browns and taking this young quarterback, whether it's at two or whether it's at six or whatever number you want to throw out there, is that all of a sudden you're going to hear from your fan base and you're going to hear from people inside of the building and you're going to hear from all that stuff that the minute whatever veteran ex quarterback starts to struggle, you're going to hear, well, you should play the kid. Get the kid out there. What's the difference? Why not have the kid? It's like, no, you need to have a plan and you need to follow the plan. And that's my fear with all of this, Scott, is that they're not going to follow the plan.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable fear. And except Andrew Berry, I believe, is smart enough and disciplined enough. And I feel the same way about Kevin Stefanski. Now, things change if you feel like your job's on the line and you're 0-3 and you go, man, maybe if we get this rookie out there, he can save things for us. And so I get the real world pressure of it. But I think it's a different situation than in 1999, when they made the switch from, you know, Ty Detmer to Tim Couch in week two, right? Tim was going to sit, and he was going to learn by on the veteran to get hammered in the opener, and like, oh, we're making the switch.
Yeah,
like, I feel like the organization's way more stable now than it was then. But that doesn't mean those real-life pressures can't affect change that you wouldn't want.
Scott, do you think they'll be in on any big money free agents?
I struggle to figure out how they're going to do it, Jeff. I know Andrew Berry says that the salary cap will not limit him from making necessary additions, but I just don't know how it doesn't to some degree. You know, you can move around money and can, you know, change the Deshaun Watson contract to restructure it to free up a bunch. But I just have a hard time with it. So maybe there's one guy. And if you're going to talk about a position where it could be, is there a left tackle that they love, and then you take that off the needs when you go to draft day?
Yeah.
But, you know, is there maybe a second-tier receiver that they love, and they figure they can pair that guy with Jerry Jeudy from the free agent market? Like, those are the two spots where I could see, okay, there's where they could invest significant money in the free agent market. But I would not expect that to be the case. I would think it'd be draft picks and then, you know, later on free agent moves, no signature signing.
Scott Petrak heading to the combine. Read everything that he's going to say about the Browns, all the coverage of the combine at brownzone.com and in the Chronicle Telegram. Have a great trip. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Scott.
Enjoy the call.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Jeff Phelps, Menigan, in for Baskin today. So Scott Petrak was just with us from the Chronicle Telegram, and we appreciate him being with us every Monday at 11 o'clock. And we're talking about the quarterback situation and all that stuff and everything else. I have two things I want to share with you here, Dana.
Oh, boy.
If Andy were here, I would say these will make your head explode.
Oh, boy.
First of all, our buddy Nick Shook.
Hey! The Shooky Cookie.
The Shooky Cookie. Local guy, Ken Stater. Writes for NFL.com. Great guy. Yeah. He had a piece out last week. It came out on the 13th. Ranking all 59. Yeah, there it goes. Ranking all 59 starting quarterbacks from the 2024 NFL season. 59 different guys started a quarterback last year in the NFL.
Again, that number?
59.
And we want to add another game, huh?
Yeah, I know. That's a valid point.
And we want to add another game.
Just for giggles. Okay.
And we want to expand, too, and add more teams.
He ranked them. 59 guys. Number one was Lamar Jackson.
Well, that makes sense.
Number two was Josh Allen. Number
also
three was Joe Burrow.
Can get behind that.
Four was Jared Goff.
No argument here.
Five was Jaden Daniels.
I have no disagreement.
Six was Baker Mayfield.
Ooh.
One spot ahead of his former Texas Tech teammate, Patrick Mahomes.
Interesting.
Matthew Stafford was eight. Jalen Hurts was nine. And Jordan Love was 10.
That feels a little high for Jordan Love.
Okay, and then, you know, there's some other guys throughout. Sam Darnold was 13th. That was it, you know, after Sam had the great year, but a bad finish. C.J. Stroud was 15. Bryce Young was 16. Tua was 18. Dak Prescott was hurt much of the year. He was still 19. Bo Nix, rookie, was 20. Drake May, 21. Aaron Rodgers, 22.
We can't talk to this is. I have
Kirk Cousins was 25.
I have disagreements.
And then he got benched. Trevor Lawrence was 26. Caleb Williams, first overall pick, was 28th.
Okay.
30 was Michael Penix Jr.
He had two games that were pretty good.
Malik Willis of the Pack was 31.
Could run the triple option with the best of them. Could go right to a service academy today. It'd be great.
And 32nd. How many teams are there?
It'd be 32.
Jameis Winston.
That checks out. Jameis Winston is a starter in this league.
Is he?
Yes. Jameis Winston is one of the 32 best quarterbacks in this league.
I kind of think so, too.
Yes. As much as everybody here, he has too many turnovers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You go down the list of gentlemen that before Jameis Winston.
And it doesn't, like he had Malik Willis ahead of Jameis. I don't buy that.
You can really make some arguments.
Aiden O'Connell at 29th. Shooky, we love you, by the way.
Yeah, it's nothing personal.
This is great. It's thought-provoking.
You've done your job by making this column, which is to make all of us talk about it and disagree with you and have discussions about it. Therefore, well done. But, like, Jameis Winston is a starting quarterback in this league, and I know nobody wants to hear that because everybody is hooked on the shiny new toy.
And like, I don't think anybody's going to give him a starting gig next year.
No, he'll be a backup somewhere, and it's going to be mind-numbing.
Yep.
Because, again, we're not starting the 32 best players. We're starting the 32 highest ceilings.
Well, he's 32nd out of the 59 starting last year. Tyler Huntley was 34.
Oof.
Daniel Jones was 37, and he got cut.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco was 40th.
And he was not good.
Mac Jones was 42nd.
He was dreadful.
Jacoby Brissett was 44th.
He was slow and dreadful.
Kenny Pickett was 47th.
Tanner
McKee was 48th. He started like one game.
He had some moments.
For the Eagles. Josh Dobbs, 49th. Josh, we love you. NASA's looking for you.
The astronaut.
My guy Trey Lance was 52nd.
Trey Lance was 52nd?
Your guy Skylar Thompson was 55th.
That checks out.
And 56th.
How in the world did he become my guy, by the way?
56th. I just like saying it. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, 56.
56. And there are 32 teams. That is correct?
There are 32 teams.
Yeah. The kind of checks out.
He was one ahead of Carson Wentz, who I said, by the way, I wouldn't mind the Browns signing. Anyhow, he barely played.
If anything, this might be more of like a revelation of how deep into the dumpster you're willing to dive.
Here's what Shooky said about Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Like, you might need a snorkel going that deep
Cleveland's
into the dumpster.
Cleveland's strange fascination with DTR likely reached its end in 2024. That's a great line.
And I would like to take a moment to thank the heavens for that one because I don't need to watch him play football anymore.
Says he looked entirely overwhelmed by the speed of the game, failed to push the Browns offense forward. They trudged toward a mercurial end of a miserable season. That's well written, Shooky. He said, if anything, DTR regressed from 2023. And if he does stick around, it's only because he's under a rookie contract.
It felt watching DTR play quarterback like everybody else was moving at 1.5 speed and he was moving at 1 speed.
Carson Wentz was 57th. Tommy DeVito was 58th.
Tommy Cutlets.
And ranked 59th out of 59 guys who started a quarterback for an NFL team at some point last year. Deshaun Watson.
That checks out.
Dead last. He said Watson proved in 2024 he's not fit to play quarterback in the NFL anymore.
That offense with him at the helm was repugnant. Like, it was offensive. Like, you should not show that to children under 17.
He said the Browns were significantly better with Winston at quarterback, which is damning for Watson's case to remain in the NFL. He'd be long gone from Cleveland if not for the contract, which I think is true.
It's 100% true.
Yeah.
It's the reason why, like, we're all looking. I feel like for the first time in a very, very long time, everybody's back onto the same page of going, like, okay, this experiment was a gargantuan failure.
Yeah.
And I'm not breaking news, and I'm not being controversial when saying that. We're all good.
It's bad. We all know the situation. The guy didn't even pass for 200 yards in a game last year. And then Jameis goes in, and yeah, he threw some interceptions, but had a 497-yard passing game and made the wide receivers look relevant.
I'll go a step further. Deshaun Watson gets hurt. DTR came in after that, right?
In that game, yeah.
In that game.
And then Jameis, too.
And led a really ugly drive. And then Jameis steps in and leads a touchdown drive. Now, granted, it was garbage time.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, led a touchdown drive in garbage time like it was nothing in the same game of all of that. Then came in and looked really good, started throwing picks, and alas, here we are. And for some reason, none of us will ever figure out outside of, let's watch the young guy play, / we want the second overall pick. Decided, okay, let's yank Jameis out of there and put in DTR and watch this thing go back to sputtering.
Shooky, I agree with you. I don't think there was anybody overall worse at quarterback than Deshaun last year, and the Browns are stuck for two more years with a contract. I had promised some news about Andrew Berry. Little thought there that it wasn't good. We talked too much quarterback. The Andrew Berry thought coming up. Plus, what was going on in Florida yesterday?
Yeah, you got to help me with this one.
I don't quite get it. It's coming up on Baskin and Phelps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm going to talk a little Daytona 500 in a minute because I'm confused. But I wanted to bring this up. Second pick in the draft, great opportunities for the Browns. We've said repeatedly they have to get it right. You know, if your evaluation is you take a quarterback, you know, you like one of those guys, you think he's going to be good, then you go ahead and you take him, you know, and you get that guy and blah, 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 right? I mean, you just do it. The question that I have in my head is, will their evaluations be right? Will they pick the better players?
That's what all of us are hoping.
Exactly.
Nobody wins when you play the draft game. When you sit back there and look at previous drafts and go, oh, well.
Well, and certainly not the Browns. The deputy editor of NFL.com is Gennaro Felice, and he put out a thing, NFL rookie grades ranking each 2024 draft class from 1 to 32. There are 32 teams in the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Browns were 32nd.
Okay.
Now,
that hurts.
They do point out right away, they made only two selections in the first 150 picks. And those two guys were the only rookies to reach 200 offensive or defensive snaps on the season.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, where you try to make hay, they didn't make hay.
Right.
Anything after round three. And they ended up trading picks and everything else. So they drafted in the second, third, fifth, sixth, and seventh rounds. And I get that. You get that. They didn't have a lot to do, you know, a lot to use.
Correct. It all went for Elijah Moore and Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. And he said, you know, Zach Zinter played every game but had trouble.
Yep. He had a rough season.
And Michael Hall Jr. looked pretty good but had trouble.
He also had a rough season for a lot of other reasons.
And then got hurt. So they had him at 32nd. So anybody who questions whether or not the Browns are going to get it right with the second pick, I think that's a valid question to ask.
It's a real valid question. He's safe, right?
Well, they said he is.
Yeah.
He's here now. If he weren't, I would think he'd be gone now, wouldn't you?
There's no shot that we're in a position.
No. Not at this point. I know what you're going to say. That they get rid of him now before the draft?
That they get rid of him after the draft. Because we've started seeing that every so often.
Why would you have a guy use the second pick in the draft and then get rid of him?
I've never understood.
I know, but teams do. I know.
We've seen it more and more lately where these teams are getting done with the draft and then going, okay, now you're done. Let's get somebody else in here. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You just set yourself back a whole bunch now.
Exactly.
The only way that I could see them
doing it. And go through free agency.
Is if for some reason they believe that Glenn Cook or somebody inside of that building along the lines could take over seamlessly and lead them in a better direction than Andrew Berry. That's the only way that you could go, okay, I guess I kind of get it. But it very much feels like that this is the guy. They think they have the guy who can make the picks. And whether the fans agree or disagree, he's the dude that's making the moves. And boy, when you hear stuff like that, it makes you ask some questions.
Yeah. I wonder. We'll see where it goes. Eddie's in Akron. Eddie, welcome to the Fan. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Hey, I understand why we have to discuss the draft. It's an interesting topic. What disappoints me about the media is that we haven't had a deep dive into why there were no internal changes, adjustments with the front office. We didn't bring anybody in. We didn't adjust our scouts. Is that something you guys can pursue and find out from the Browns why?
Well, I can tell you why. They gave those guys contract extensions, and they believe continuity is the way to go.
I'm not asking to fire them. I'm saying, could you not bring in an additional person with a different point of view or experience?
Well, the guy who's running it is the guy who's running it,
yeah,
and that's Andrew Berry.
It's the question that I had when it came to deciding, okay, we're going to move up Bill Musgrave and we're going to move up Tommy Rees. Like, that was the question that I had. Is like, you're not going to go outside the organization at all for one of the crummiest offenses we've all watched for an extended period of time. Instead, you're just going to go, that's all on Ken Dorsey. He's the problem. Goodbye. Like,
yes, they did.
That's really what it feels like, is they just went, it's Ken Dorsey, it's Andy Dickerson. It's all on those two. Those two were the whole reason that this thing went to squat.
Well, we know there's more to it than that. The quarterback play was a huge part of it.
Correct.
So Kevin ran good offenses in the past.
Yes.
My guess is they're planning to go back to that. And that, Eddie, is why they didn't make moves.
It's my guess,
the
too.
Ownership likes the head coach, and ownership likes the front office.
But
at least right now.
But I would have thought that you would have brought in someone else just to go.
You did that last year, and it didn't work.
Oh, someone, okay, like Clint Kubiak would be a perfect example. And maybe it's because Clint Kubiak wants to call plays, okay? That's easily could be the reason. That could easily solve all of these woes and answer all that question. But you would have thought that they would have went out and got somebody else from the same tree, Stefanski tree, right? And brought them in and said, all right, we are heading back to what we know, but we want to bring in a little bit more of a modern flair to it. So we brought this guy in to help it. And maybe that's the Tommy Rees thing, and maybe that becomes the answer to it. But it seemed bizarre to me that they didn't do that at any point. Instead, everything was in-house, and they just threw their hands up in the air and went, it's Andy Dickerson and Ken Dorsey's fault. Well, those two are out of there. We're going to be back to normal, and everything's fine.
I thought when Tommy Rees was brought in, I thought, all right, offensive coordinator in waiting. It doesn't surprise me at all that he got the gig. I assumed that he would, if you want to know the truth.
I thought they would go, okay, this was all a mess. Maybe we keep Tommy Rees along for a little bit or let somebody else take it over from there and bring in somebody with ties to the Shanahan-Kubiak tree. I thought that's the route they would go. You were right. They stuck with Tommy Rees. I'm in.
Now he better be good.
Yeah.
Now he better be good.
Absolutely.
I wanted to bring this up. Did you watch any of the Daytona 500? We had Matt Collig on. His team didn't win, but Matt's team's had a good showing at the Daytona 500, Collig Racing. Did you watch any of it?
I did not.
Okay.
But I saw that it was a mess.
The poor guy, it was a mess. The poor thing was supposed to start at like 2:30, rain delay, as opposed to Indy cars, you know, that sometimes run in the rain. They don't run these things in the rain, so they had to dry the track and everything else, and it started late. Sometime around 5:30, 6:30, something like that. So it ended up being a night race. I don't understand this. And if anybody from who is a big NASCAR fan wants to help me with this, I do not understand for the life of me why they race 500 miles anymore. Because they do these things called stages. And after a stage, all right, so you won the first stage and it's like 60 laps. And then they bunch everybody back up again. And then you run another stage, and you bunch everybody back up again. So it's like three different races.
Wait.
And then you run the final stage, and everybody's all bunched up. And you get to the final laps of the race, and everybody's on the lead lap. And they're all in a big pack. And to me, the idea of going 500 miles in an auto race is because the best car and perhaps the best driver separate themselves. And there's no separation in like almost all of these NASCAR races. And you had major, major crashes in like the last 10 laps of the race. Cars just getting blown out of there. I don't get it.
I don't either. Like, I don't understand. So, I am NASCAR dumb. I will be the first to say that.
I love it, but I don't get it either.
I don't really, like, I don't really pay attention to it. I understand it in the general thing that the fastest car who is the best driver and maneuvers the best around the track is the one that comes out ahead. Like, I understand how, like, races work, but, like, I'm not the brightest NASCAR person. And yeah, I'm a little over my skis on this, so please, I apologize to everybody out there
so
who are NASCAR fans.
And so am I.
Before all the dumb things that are about to come out of my mouth, I apologize. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to be better. So if you could correct me, please correct me on any of this. When did the stages thing start? Has that always been
the
case? I
think it was 2019 in Daytona.
Okay.
So, but like you watch the Indy 500, somebody might pull out to a lead, you know, like have a half lap lead. Well, that can be dramatic too.
Right.
I actually think it's even more dramatic than, okay, who's going to get wrecked here? Because that's what happens. The guy in the lead lap, last night got wrecked from the guy behind him.
Correct.
Ended up taking out Ryan Preece, who used to race for Brad Doherty.
Yes.
And he went airborne. And it's like, well, all this does is, and the guy who won was William Bryan. I think he said that's his last name. And his second year in a row. I should know that. And he just happened to be in ninth place when leaders got taken out, and he just drove through the mess. So, in other words, it was the last guy standing kind of thing. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what it sounds like.
It's like, oh, there's nobody in front of me. I can go. And he did, and he won. And it happened, you know, the cars wrecked on the last lap. To me, that's not racing. To me, that's like, keep your fingers crossed that we don't get wiped out on the last couple of laps.
Right.
And it defeats the entire purpose. I don't find it interesting because though folks might like, you know, everybody on the last lap because it's chaos. Yeah, it's chaos.
Right.
Instead of a race. You bunch everybody up. I don't get it. So maybe I don't have an appreciation for it.
It feels a little bit more like a shootout the way that you're laying it out.
Exactly right. You could do what they do by running a 10-lap race.
Right. That's kind of what it sounds like is they've taken a race that's known for
endurance.
Its longevity. Like,
yeah.
Like in the, you know. It's endurance, it's ability to drive for an extended period of time, ability to read, ability to, you know, do all these things.
Ability to have a better car.
Right. And have shortened it in such a way that it's almost cheapened it.
I think so.
So
weird to me.
Yeah, I wonder what made them make this change all those years ago, because you're right, it was always, the Daytona 500 was all about endurance. I mean, and again, my auto racing is very minimal. I've seen Ford versus Ferrari a whole bunch of times, so I can give you what they know about Le Mans. But like, which by the way, God, is that a good movie? Anyhow, I know it from that regard, and I know the biggest thing when it comes from that race is having, you know, the multiple drivers and the ability to keep the car together and not burn out or anything like that that comes with it. And I always thought the Daytona 500 was a shortened version of that general concept.
Well, these guys just wreck each other.
Right.
And they do it in the final laps. And the whole thing is, well, if you're running at the end, all right, well, like, you know, there were 20 cars running at the end in the lead pack. I mean, they're all there. And then they wipe each other out.
Yeah, because I'm like reading updates on Twitter.
I don't find it entertaining to watch.
And I'm just seeing like tens of drivers just getting knocked out all over the place in these wrecks. And then I see so-and-so won stage three. And I was like, stage three? What are we doing? What is this? What?
And then this guy wins the race because the guys in front of him got wiped out on the last lap. And they always say, well, you know it's going to come. So you just got to be there and you never know what happens. Well, then that's not really racing. That's luck, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
more than
either
anything?
That or it's reactions, an ability to dodge something or see some kind of indication that a wreck is about to come and get away from it, which I guess is driving in some way, shape, or form. I give them credit for that one. But, boy, adding more wrecks doesn't feel like the solution, unless that's what people want.
William Byron, the winner, learned to race on computers when he was a kid. You know, these guys start doing go-karts and everything at a really young age. He didn't start driving until he was 15, but he did everything on simulation, on video games and stuff, and he was a big-time video game race winner.
Yeah, playing Gran Turismo or all those.
All that stuff. Yeah. And when his dad, when he was 15, his dad thought, well, how can we maybe see if he can actually be a driver? So as opposed to these other guys who, you know, start driving these go-karts and everything at a much younger age, he did it from video games.
That's cool.
And it is kind of cool, isn't
that's
it?
Way, yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like those pilot simulators and all that stuff and how they do the flight simulators. Yep. Yeah.
That said, I still like watching the Daytona 500 and NASCAR. But for the life of me, I don't get it. I don't get what they're thinking. Jimmy Watkins is a columnist for the PlaindealerCleveland.com. Jimmy's going to join us next. We're going to talk a little Browns, a little Cavaliers with Jimmy on Baskin and Phelps. Menigan's in for Andy today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Toyota has been building a legacy of excellence for years. From developing hybrid technology to upping the standards of safety and efficiency, Toyota is always innovating, always making progress. And with Toyota's superior lineup of SUVs in stock at your local Toyota dealer, you can experience the legacy for yourself. So check out an adventure-ready RAV4, designed to be the perfect mix of style, practicality, and go-anywhere attitude. Or test drive a capable and affordable Corolla Cross with the space and available tech to keep you cool and connected. And both RAV4 and Corolla Cross are available with all-wheel drive, giving you the freedom to roam. Quality, reliability, efficiency. That's the legacy of Toyota. Visit buyatoyota.com, the official website for deals, to find out more. Or stop by your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.